mountains, deserts and streams. The rise of Dos Cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams.
This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Arizona Highways Magazine is celebrating its 100th anniversary with this, the April 2025 issue. One of the articles is entitled 100 Years Milestones. In my last recording, I read Milestones 1 through 28, so today I'll start with Milestone 29, Charles Franklin Parker, December 1942. Charles Franklin Parker made his debut in September 1941 with a short piece about a Chinese immigrant from Prescott who returned to his native home to become one of the great merchant princes of China. In May 1942, we published an excerpt of his book, Peace Unto You. His first in-depth piece in December 1942 is a profile of the cowboy poet Badger Clark, an Arizonan who epitomized the genre. The story begins, I sat one evening at a campfire high in a mountain retreat and heard the man who taught me to love and understand the great West read poetry. It was unlike the poetry that I had read or ever heard. It was strong poetry, full of robustness and yet sanely reverent. It was a man's poetry, and yet held the softness and tranquility of a mother's lullaby. Parker would go on to write dozens of stories for us, some in tandem with his daughter, Kitty Jo Parker Nelson. Milestone number 30, This Land I Love, December 1942. Although we're best known for our photography, we've also featured some wonderful writers in our 100 years, including Joyce Rockwood, John Reed Lauritsen, Nancy Newell, Charles Bowden, and Terry Tempest Williams. Another was editor Raymond Carlson. He was an exemplar of the literary medium, and his opus was an essay titled This Land I Love. It begins, This land I love, this small corner of America, holds its broad shoulders firm and strong against the sky. Its personality is as varied as its people. Deserts are tossed against mountains, canyons cut deep into the solid rock of plateaus, rocky peaks which should have perished long ago against the onslaughts of time and the weather point bravely at the endless clouds drifting by. The country rolls and tosses and pitches, the unwavering miles flowing out in cosmic poetry. A spendthrift, it is lavish in space and distance, and its bigness is overpowering, formidable. To people accustomed to country built on a smaller plan, this land, in its very bigness, is an awesome thing. Milestone 31, Arizona Highways gets a call from the Pentagon, June 1943. In our June 1943 issue, at the height of World War II, we published a piece titled The Navajo Indian at War. It was a summary of the Navajo's many contributions to the war effort. The story was written by a government official named James M. Stewart, who was a superintendent for the Navajo Indian Service in Window Rock. About halfway into the piece, he spotlights the top secret work of the Navajo Code Talkers. The U.S. Marine Corps had organized a special Navajo signal unit for combat communication service, he writes. A platoon of 30 Navajos was recruited in the spring of 1942. Its members were trained in signal work using the Navajo language as a code. J.P. Sullivan, the commanding officer of the Field Signal Battalion Training Center, obtained a copy of our magazine and sent it to General Alexander A. Vandergrift. After a lengthy investigation, the Pentagon was unable to identify who was responsible for the breach of security, and the matter was closed. A few months after publishing that information, Raymond Carlson, a patriot to the Corps, stepped down as our editor and joined the U.S. Army. Milepost 32, Flattering Letter, September-October 1943. Because of paper rationing during World War II, we combined our September and October issues in 1943. We are not trying to shortchange our customers, editor Raymond Carlson wrote, but in order to come within our paper quota, greatly reduced as you know, we are combining two issues this month. A few weeks before that, we got a letter to the editor from Ansel Adams. Like finding a buffalo nickel in your grandmother's Davenport, that would have caused quite a stir in the mailroom. The letter reads in part, I've intended for a long time to write you and express my sincere admiration for the job you are doing with Arizona Highways. My admiration is augmented by the fact that the quality of the magazine has not been reduced during the war period. In fact, in some ways, it has seemed to me to have actually improved. Your magazine conveys a true impression of land and people and should serve as a model for all publications of this type. I am very happy to be on your mailing list. Milepost 33, Ray Manley, October 1944. As a young man in the 1930s, Ray Manley dreamed of capturing a few nature photographs worthy of being printed in a fledgling magazine called Arizona Highways. In 1939, he later told us, I bought my first 10-sheet box of Kodachrome. I studied my subjects well before exposing that film because $1 a sheet was a lot of money to pay for film in those days. Indeed, when you adjust for inflation, that's about $225 for 10 photographs. Nevertheless, the investment paid off. Of those 10 shots, 3 became covers for us, including his debut, a photograph of the San Francisco peaks that ran on the back cover of our December 1944 issue. For Mr. Manley, the covers were just the beginning. He would go on to become one of our legendary photographers, as well as a regular contributor to the Saturday Evening Post, Life, and National Geographic. This month, he joins 14 others in the inaugural class of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame. Milepost 34, Ansel Adams, March 1946. In March 1946, Ansel Adams made his debut in Arizona Highways. By that time, he was already considered one of the world's great landscape photographers. However, despite his reputation as a master of black and white composition, his first photograph in the magazine was a 2-page color spread of Monument Valley. It was the first, but not the last. Over the years, editor Raymond Carlson and Mr. Adams developed a deep friendship and a mutually beneficial professional relationship. And whenever the photographer would pass through Phoenix, he'd stop by the magazine. During one of those visits, he suggested that Arizona Highways purchase a large collection of his photographs at a good price to be used whenever. The bill for that collection, which turned out to be 150 photographs, was $1,500, $10 apiece. Today, $10 will buy you a couple of double whoppers. This month, Mr. Adams joins 14 others in the inaugural class of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame. Milepost 35, An Interesting Letter, April 1946. My congratulations on your last issue, a seemingly random letter from 1946 begins. It tops everything you have ever gotten out. I may avail myself of the opportunity on my national broadcast to recommend Arizona to tourists this summer. I would greatly appreciate it if you could obtain and send to me the various legends of the Hassawampa waters. I have a collection of many stories from my boyhood, but they are rather confused now. The letter was signed Fiorello LaGuardia, New York, New York. Turns out the legendary mayor and airport namesake lived in Arizona until he was 16. After that, he moved to Italy with his family and later New York. In response to the letter, our editor wrote, "We're always grateful for compliments, but doubly so when they come from native-born Arizonans like Fiorello LaGuardia." All the legends of the Hassawampa have been sent to Mr. LaGuardia, as well as a canteen of water from the river. According to legend, if you drink the waters of the Hassawampa, you will never tell the truth again. Be warned, Mr. LaGuardia, be warned. Milepost 36, Blessed Are the Meek, December 1946. The Navajo people and their homeland have appeared on many of our covers since 1925. The most famous cover was published in December 1946. Ray asked me to photograph some Navajos in the snow, tending their sheep, Barry Goldwater said in reference to our longtime editor Raymond Carlson. This was in late February 1946, and I told him he was out of his head that it never snowed on the reservation in springtime. So I said, I'd try to get something the next year. But as it happened, I was up at the trading post, Rainbow Lodge, near Navajo Mountain the next week, and when I woke up one morning, there was about 2 feet of snow all over everything. So I ran down the road about 3 miles and got my picture. Just what he wanted. Of all the milestones in this magazine's storied history, that issue is among the most significant. In addition to having Mr. Goldwater's beautiful photograph on the cover, it was North America's first ever all-color issue of a nationally circulated consumer magazine. We beat National Geographic, Life, Look, Vogue, the Saturday Evening Post. We beat them all. Milepost 37, Alan C. Reed, July 1949. Alan Reed is an editor's dream. Tom Cooper, our eighth editor, wrote in the 1970s. He can write, photograph, and illustrate. Better yet, he does all of these things with expertise. He's one of those special people you can turn loose with a story idea, and he will deliver a complete package. After attending art school in Los Angeles and being part owner of an advertising firm there, Mr. Reed packed up and moved to Arizona. He quickly made a name for himself as a freelancer, and in July 1949, he made his debut in Arizona Highways. It was a story titled Peach Harvest in Supai Land. The twinkling fires of the Havasupais seemed to be reflections of the stars, he wrote, a timeless moment to hesitate, as though on a cloud enveloped above and below by the heavens. In the years that followed, he wrote and photographed more than 50 features for us. This month, he joins 14 others in the inaugural class of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame. Milestone 38, J.B. Priestley, December 1949. In its March 1937 issue, Harper's Magazine excerpted a book titled Midnight on the Desert, an autobiographical account of J.B. Priestley's time in Wickenburg. More than a decade later, our editor convinced the eminent English novelist and essayist to write a piece for us, an excerpt. It is now more than 11 years since I last saw Arizona. This is a long time, much too long, and nobody must imagine that the Priestley family have fallen out of love with Arizona. The desert crept into all our hearts. Every month we take a peep or two through the tantalizing little windows of Arizona highways, and we begin to remember again. What do we remember? Well, here I shall speak for myself. My mind returns first to the Remuda Ranch at Wickenburg, where we stayed so long. It was the only piece he ever wrote for us, but we'll take it. Milestone 39, Brave Poppy, December 1949. Esther Henderson, who would photograph anything, especially loved shooting wildflowers. One of the best poppy blooming areas was near Bowie, she said, where they cascaded down the hillsides like the Sherman Williams paint ad that said, "We cover the earth." In 1942, she went there with her husband, photographer Chuck Abbott, but it wasn't what she was expecting. We found that much less rainfall had produced only scattered plants and the caked mud of a dry lake, she said. We had come so far and had such high hopes that I was reluctant to leave without something. And so, since I couldn't photograph an acre of poppies, I took a picture of just one growing out of a mud crack. I called it the Brave Poppy, and it was my and some others' favorite picture, a picture with a message. Among those who loved it was longtime editor Raymond Carlson, who singled it out as his favorite among the tens of thousands of transparencies he had seen in his time at the magazine. Milepost 40, Sylvia Lewis Kinney, March 1950. Poetry has been a constant in Arizona Highway since our second issue. One of the most frequent mid-century contributors was Sylvia Lewis Kinney, who made her debut in March 1950 with a poem titled Westbound. About the poet, our editor Raymond Carlson wrote, "With all the somber and terrifying events greeting us each morning in our daily newspaper, it is reassuring to know there is someone who smiles occasionally, pokes a gentle finger at our foibles, and shares with us a glimpse into her own wonderful world." Milepost 41, William O. Douglas, April 1951. In April 1951, Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas wrote a piece for us titled Boba Quaveri. In his column, editor Raymond Carlson offered some background. A distinguished American, William O. Douglas, Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, has known many mountains in many lands. In this issue, he tells of Boba Quaveri Peak and his pleasure in climbing it. Mr. Douglas came to Arizona several winters ago to recover his health after being seriously injured in a mountain accident in the Northwest. You can't keep a good mountain man down, so when he was able to do so, he decided to accept the challenge of Boba Quaveri and found the subject worth the effort. Milepost 42, Life and Time, September 1951. In the fall of 1951, Arizona Highways got the attention of the editors of Life and Time. They took notice because we'd been picked up by the Independent News Company of New York. At the time, it was one of the largest national and international magazine distributors in the country. To that point, we'd been a small mom-and-pop publication with limited circulation. Then, just like that, Our magazine was available on newsstands in London, Tokyo, and Midtown Manhattan. Both Life and Time ran feature stories which made our team proud, so much so that we ordered a truckload of copies. Milestone 43, Gallery of Western Paintings, November 1951. Like at National Geographic, Time and Life, books have been a part of our portfolio for a long time. The first book associated with the magazine, through our editor, is titled Gallery of Western Paintings. In November 1951, we ran a promo from the publisher. McGraw-Hill, one of the nation's leading book publishers, announces the publication of Gallery of Western Paintings, edited by Raymond Carlson. This superb art book presents striking color reproductions of paintings by foremost Western artists: Remington, Russell, Lee, Dixon, Bartlett, Delano, Swinnerton, and Strang. It also contains sketches by Ross Santee. The features chosen in this book originally appeared in Arizona Highways. The editor of the book, who is also editor of this publication, has written informal essays treating with each of the artists. This book is now on sale in leading bookstores throughout the world or can be ordered direct from Arizona Highways, Phoenix, Arizona. The price is $8.50. Milestone 44, Laura Gilpin, December 1952. On May 26, 1952, our editor sent a letter to photographer Laura Gilpin. "We have carefully gone through all of your Indian material," he wrote. "I am very sorry that we did not have it sooner, because some of your Navajo Fair material is much better than the material we finally selected for a feature on the Navajo Fair, and which has been in the hands of the printers for about 4 months. Of the group of material that you have sent us, we would like to hold the transparency of the Navajo lady in the covered wagon and also the Navajo girl displaying a prize-winning old-time dress at the Navajo Fair. We will probably not have occasion to use these until next spring, but would like to hold them in our file to have them on hand. Your material is grand. I will be very proud when we have you as a regular contributor to our publication." He didn't waste any time. In December of that year, Miss Gilpin made her debut in Arizona Highways with two images. One was an action shot of wild horses, and the other was a landscape photograph from the Navajo Nation, the place where she would distinguish herself as one of the country's great portrait photographers. Milepost 45, Larry Toshchik, January 1953. Larry Toshchik made his artistic debut in Arizona Highways in 1953 with a beautiful map showcasing the state's best places to go bass fishing. In addition to his talent as a fine artist, he was an accomplished graphic artist. "He designed the layouts for the magazine each month," said his son, Tom. "I remember riding over to the magazine offices with him sometimes as he delivered his work to Ray Carlson. Over the next 2 decades, we would publish dozens of Mr. Toshchik's detailed maps. This month, he joins 14 others in the inaugural class of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame." Milepost 46, Wimbledon tickets, September 1953. "We could fill volumes of books with the interesting letters we've gotten over the years. One of the best came in 1953 from Lieutenant Colonel Wynne F. Zeller of the United States Air Force. It read, 'In the personnel column of the London Times, Saturday, May 23, 1953, the following item appeared: Wimbledon center court seat offered final Saturday to American in exchange subscription Arizona Highways 1954. The classified ad then included a mailing address. In response, our editor wrote, "Because of Colonel Zeller's thoughtfulness, we were happy to see the personal item in which some interested Englishman was willing to trade two fine seats at the great tennis tournament for our publication. We have written to the ticket holder's address. If this offer remains unanswered by some American reader of the Times, we will see that our publication will be sent as a courtesy." Milepost 47, The Oasis, November 1953. The movie version of Oklahoma was filmed in the grasslands of southern Arizona, and the windmill that was built for the movie set was inspired by a Peter Hurd painting that appeared on our cover in November 1953. The subject is out of my own childhood when, like many another southwestern boys, I learned to swim in a stock tank, Mr. Hurd said. The cover painting, titled The Oasis, is beautiful, and so are the 13 paintings inside. We feel that the reproductions we have this month of his works speak for themselves, editor Raymond Carlson wrote. They deal with simple things, people, scenes, moods. He has recorded everyday living around him with love and understanding, a life that he has known not as an interested spectator, but a life of which he has been a part since his birth. Milepost 48, Color Classics, May 1954. In the 1950s, under the leadership of our business manager, Jim Stevens, we started expanding our product line beyond the magazine. The first big endeavor was something we called Color Classics, and it debuted in May 1954. We are pleased to announce that 35mm color slides in 2-inch by 2-inch mounts made from original color photographs published in Arizona Highways are now available. This announcement will please the many hundreds of our readers who have requested that such slides be issued. Our first 100 Color Classics cover some of the most popular subjects published herein. Additional subjects will be announced in our June issue. Our price schedule is as follows: 1 to 15 slides, 40 cents each, 16 to 49 slides, 35 cents each, in orders of 50 slides or more, 3 for a dollar. Orders should be sent to Arizona Highways, Phoenix, Arizona. Slides should be ordered only by numbers listed below. Milepost 49, David Munch, January 1955. Like Mozart and Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, David Munch was born to become a superlative, but no one expected it so quickly or so easily. Not even his father, the legendary photographer Josef Munch, who had invited his teenage son to tag along on a trip to Arizona Highways in the early 1950s. They were there to see Raymond Carlson, the editor who turned no names into household names, as Harold Ross had done with E.B. White and James Thurber. After poring over what might have been hundreds of 4x5 transparencies made by the elder Munch, Mr. Carlson turned to the son. "As soon as you make a good picture, I'll publish it," he said, and so he did. He put one on the cover from the very first visit, Mr. Munch said. The cover! He got the back cover, too. It would be impossible to single out the best photographer in the history of the magazine. To name the patriarch, however, is easy. His name is David Munch, who is now in his 8th decade of sharing his brilliant work with us. This month, he joins 14 others in the inaugural class of the Arizona Highways Hall of Fame. Milepost 50, Oklahoma, April 1955. In 1953, Alan C. Reed was on assignment for Arizona Highways in southern Arizona to document the unlikely filming of a movie that many people, mostly Okies, thought should have been shot where it was set, but that wasn't an option. The decision to film Oklahoma and Arizona was not a difficult one, film historian John B. LaRue III said. Oklahoma in 1954 did not look like the Oklahoma of 1854, but parts of Arizona did. Arthur Hornblow, the producer, agreed. We had 3 crews roaming around Oklahoma and surrounding states looking for an ideal location, he said. The reports were discouraging. Oklahoma today isn't like Oklahoma of 1905. One day, while waiting in my dentist's reception room, I idly picked up the magazine on top, Arizona Highways. I took one look at the cover, a scene between Nogales and Tucson, and rushed to a phone. I called the studio and told them to order our location crews to come home. Milestone 51, Not Welcome in East Germany, May 1955. In 1965, Arizona Highways would be blacklisted in the Soviet Union. We should have seen it coming, based on a letter we'd gotten from Bella Hubbard of Tucson 10 years earlier, in May 1955. For several years, I had been sending a subscription to a friend in the East Zone, Germany, and he reported receiving his copies regularly. He and his friends in this little town behind the Iron Curtain enjoyed the beautiful scenes and descriptions of our wonderful state of Arizona, and it made them forget their troubles. Even the village postmaster would sometimes hold back delivery of copies for a day so that he also could look at the pictures. Lacking any references to politics or ideology, Arizona Highways was doing, nevertheless, too good a job in promoting friendliness and international goodwill in areas where such instincts are not wanted by the Kremlin rulers. So one day, about a year ago, Arizona Highways was placed on the verboten list, and all of his copies were confiscated and probably burned by the censors. Milestone 52, Subscription Price, August 1955. In early May, our editor wrote in August 1955, this publication found a wolf on the doorstep in the shape of increasing costs, postage, paper, social security, and so on. We asked a cross-section of our readership their opinion. Accept advertising, note Reader's Digest, cheapen the magazine, or increase the price from $3 to $3.50. The response was gratifying and truly warmed the hearts of all of us. That note was followed by a handful of the thousands of letters we received from the cross-section that was queried. One of the letters was sent by Gertrude E. Merriman of San Francisco. "Arizona Highways is a delightful magazine," she wrote, "informative and beautiful. The pleasure it affords is worth more than the subscription price." Milestone 53, National Awards, January 1956. In the same way that we started piling up subscribers in the 1950s, we also started gathering awards from national organizations. This friendly Western Family Journal has been given two more national awards, our editor wrote in January 1956. Our photography award comes from the Photographers Association of America and reads, "Arizona Highways, for the consistent use of color in the magazine to illustrate and interpret the natural beauties of the state of Arizona, and for seeking high professional talent to produce, under sympathetic direction, color photographs for this purpose." Our History Award comes from the American Association for State and Local History and reads, "Arizona Highways, for its constant attention to Arizona history, which it writes well and illustrates beautifully. Needless to say, we are proud to be so honored, and we hope these pages will always be worthy enough to merit such consideration." That concludes today's readings from the April 2025 issue of Arizona Highways. This is Kathy Damaris, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Deserts and streams, rise of those cabezas and the outlaws I see in my dreams. I love you, Arizona.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Log on to sunsounds.org, left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. In addition, you can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.